Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. I'm in Peoria, Arizona. Week two of Padres. Week two. Let's call it week two. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. He's in San Diego. Ryan, there's a lot. Like, there's only a few topics to hit, but within those few topics, there's a lot. Where do you want to start?
Absolutely. We're going to sort of rip off, pardon the interruption here, Kevin. We're going to go just sort of one topic at a time until we run out of time here. So I'd like to start with AJ Preller. AJ Preller, after sort of months of speculation, gets his contract extension here. I have some questions here, but let's start with, you know, how in doubt was this ever? And what does it mean that this has been agreed to right now?
Despite all the fretting, despite what even some people would try to tell me, as I reported all along, it was not in doubt. It just wasn't. Now, was it in doubt in terms of it wasn't done? And the longer these things go, then okay. But this turned out like 99.9% of all contract negotiations I have covered in my career. And I'm including like there, I've covered some ugly ones, like threats, I'll never play again. They're the worst. And then it gets done. And, you know, somebody reported last Thursday that there were people in the organization that were saying it was going to get done by Monday. And we never reported anything other than these people were saying it was going to get done soon. And it was. That's not to like, that's not at all like to gloat. That's just to say, like I said to John Seidler and AJ Preller, whew, glad you guys got this in with only 250 days to go before the contract expired. I mean, right under the wire. Like, I get it. I get it. And you know, AJ Preller did not want the terms of the length reported because he's never been comfortable with all that. The rock star GM, he was not comfortable with talking about his contract status. He wondered why it doesn't happen with other GMs. You don't hear about other GMs and it becomes a big deal. And I, you know, it's like, well, other GMs haven't been around for 12 years. They don't get a chance to have this happen to them. So congratulations. It just wasn't in doubt. Right.
And we can say, I mean, they don't want the details out there, but they said it was a multi-year contract. My guess is they didn't tear up the deal, his existing deal, right?
Right.
So we can assume that this is for three more seasons at bare minimum.
Right.
Of AJ Preller.
Right. One plus two, you know, because two qualifies as multi. Right. That also is how long Craig Stammen's contract runs. You would think, and this is all speculation, though that's exactly the fact that it would be through 28 is what people in the organization have speculated. Like, listen, there's probably 10 people that know this. We're talking HR people, legal people, CFO, COO, CEO, John Seidler, AJ Preller, Josh Stein. That might be the list of people that know. Think about it. Stuff about the Padres like that. If Preller has anything to say about it, don't get out. That's not to say that this won't get out. But yeah, probably through then. Plus with new ownership, like, how much did AJ want to be tied down? Though I think he's probably looking forward to seeing what that's all about. But, you know, the grass isn't always greener. Plus, how much do you want to saddle the new owner with? So, yeah, I think that's probably a really good guess.
Right. Do we think that that was a complicating factor here? If the team was not for sale, do you think that maybe a deal would have been agreed to earlier?
Well, John Seidler wouldn't have been so busy. So maybe. I really think that was it. Like this team's been going pretty good. Yes, we can talk about the new owner who's going to pay $2.5 billion for this team probably. So buying out Preller, probably not a huge deal. But you could talk about he might want to bring in his new people. But the fact is, like, you know, AJ Preller done a pretty good job.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Kevin, we've talked about this off camera. It's my contention that AJ Preller is the Padres' identity in a way. The bold moves, the risky moves, the all in, all ball, all the time AJ Preller approach. I mean, I sort of think is sort of what people from outside of San Diego think of when they think of the Padres. right? It's a team that's always doing something. It's a team that's always interesting, always
relevant. If not, Ryan, he's why they think of the San Diego Padres.
Yep.
Because he made them relevant.
It's true. And again, better to be there. There's a level of relevance with this baseball team that frankly did not exist for the first 40 years of their existence. Even when they were good, they weren't good for long, right? I mean, they weren't great in 83 and 85. They weren't great in 99 and 97. To a certain extent, this is now sort of the Padres, I think, all-time identity is locked up into what's happened here the last 10 or 12 years. And to me, it's fascinating stuff. And really interesting to see whoever the next owner is, what their opinion of AJ Preller will be, and what, if anything, that changes.
Yeah, they'll have fun getting to know him. That I know.
Yep. Next up on our list, you see that, Nolan? Castellanos. Padres signed Nick Castellanos. Kevin, I read a story in The Athletic late night Saturday about the circumstances behind Nick Castellanos's departure from Philadelphia. And when I woke up the next morning, Nick Castellanos was a Padre. How did that come about, and where does he fit in?
Well, I think the Padres were interested in him at, you know, a very low price, very little chance that trade talks between the Phillies and anybody, including the Padres, which did happen during the winter, were going to go, result in something, because the Phillies were going to have to basically eat all of the contract, as they ended up doing. But the Padres were interested. They got on the Zoom call with them right away, him and his agent, with Josh Stein, AJ Preller, Craig Stammen, and they felt like they got their answers that they needed about what happened in Philadelphia and who he was. They were, I think, to some extent, if not surprised, like, you know, they were like, oh, wow, this is a really cool guy. And he owned up to his part and any sort of, issues in the clubhouse, his part, and certainly the thing that was reported about him being upset about being taken out of a game in Miami, his hometown, and last year, and taking a beer into the dugout and, confronting general or manager Rob Thompson. So that's how it came about. And for $780,000, it's a flyer worth taking. This guy is, and I'll state that as fact, this guy is not Yuli Gurriel. He's not Jason Hayward. He's 33 years old. He hit 17 bombs last year. He could be a real player. Not the all-star Nick Castellanos, almost certainly, but a real good platoon player. He could be that. Now, that's what we can say about all these that we're going to talk about, the pitchers they signed too. So I'll try to make this the only time I say it. None of these might work out. Mm-hmm. Almost certainly all of them won't work out.
Right.
But if some of them work out, and I got a story I'm posting later about the $30 million value that the Padres got for $4 million in Nick Pivetta, the $20 million value they got in for $2.5 million in Jurickson Profar the year before. If they can get some sort of exponential value for one or two of these players that they've signed in the past week, then it was a good week.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how about this? If Nick Castellanos is just a league average Major League Baseball, right? If he's league average, dead flat average, as they say, what is that worth? Is he a $10 million player?
Yeah.
If he's a league average DH? Or a league average platoon first baseman? I mean, is that worth $10 million?
Well, here's what you got to look at. The Phillies are, they were going to pay him $20 million. So, he's not a $20 million player at a 2 WAR or a, flat 100 WRC plus or OPS plus. None of us would go, ooh, well, yeah, it's worth $20 million. But that's what he was going to make. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and that's what a 33-year-old who's been in the league 13 years makes on a long-term contract that he signed back in 22. That's what you're paying. So, what's it worth? I mean, 15? Yeah.
Yeah, 15. I mean, what's one win above replacement worth, right? Isn't that what, 8, 9, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's funny. I go and I look at these things, and I know there's values assigned, like Fangraphs does, and certain organizations really go by it. But it's like, also, there's some really crappy players making $30 million,
Yep. Kevin, what What impact did Manny Machado have on any of the last two topics we talked about, whether it's the AJ Preller contract extension that he really went to bat for or Nick Castellanos? As a zero.
I mean, I shouldn't say zero. Not it. Manny gets talked to about everything, basically. And yes, but more for Castellanos, him and other people in the clubhouse. Hey, how do we feel about this? What do you know? Obviously, Manny's known him since childhood, and they both live in Miami. And so I shouldn't say zero there. I should not say that at all. As a matter of fact, I mean, if Manny vetoes that, it doesn't happen. But in terms of AJ Preller, like, other than the fact that, and I thought it was really cool what Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr., the sincerity and the poignancy of what they said yesterday, and you can read about it, about how they feel about AJ Preller, the genuineness, that knowing he's got their back, knowing that their general manager, whatever payroll constraints or not, like, he's going to go, like, be above and beyond to make them the best team that they can be. They believe that. And I thought that was really cool. The reason I said zero is the idea that Manny Machado speaking up as he did on Sunday had anything to do with the contract getting done on Sunday night is ludicrous. It did not.
Right. This had been in the works for months. And as you reported last Thursday, they thought it would be done by Monday. And it was. And it was. They were optimistic.
Right.
It's going to be done by Monday. Kevin, you've been covering sports your whole adult life here. It's interesting to me when I hear athletes talk about the love they have for a front office person. Some athletes don't get beyond, hi, how you doing, with their general manager. And these guys love him. What about AJ Preller, outside of the fact that he signed off on major contracts for all these guys?
Yeah.
What about AJ Preller makes him so beloved in some corners of that clubhouse?
We've been talking with some people in the organization about it. He's a real dude. He's funny as heck. We already established that they do believe he is going to do whatever possible to make the team better. He's just a real dude. Let's also note that he got the chance. I guarantee you that people like Manny and how he feels about AJ has evolved over time because he got to know him, right? Players in 2019, 20, maybe even 21 didn't really know, right? Like, because there's this thing that players have toward management, generally speaking, right? Like, a little bit like them and us. And so AJ has been given all this time to show who he is. Think about how far he and Fernando Tatis Jr. have come. He got Fernando in 2016 in that trade before Fernando had played a professional game. He was there for a lot of his single A, his double A growth. Then Fernando comes up to the majors. They put him in the majors in 2019, which was not a guarantee at the start of camp, but he earned it. And then you go through everything where Tatis gets suspended. Preller, I've never seen him as angry as he was. And that their relationship sort of took on more of a, okay, AJ is more of a parent, is more of a going to hold him accountable, and but has his back no matter what, too. Like, that's earned by AJ Preller. And so, I mean, that's big, because you're right. Like, you don't hear that. And that's where I want to say, like, the sincerity with which Manny Machado spoke on this on Monday after the contract was announced. That was what struck me.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I thought it was interesting too, what Tatis said about holding him accountable, you know, because I guess, and maybe I'm just a little jaded, when I hear these guys say, well, we love AJ Preller, he's the best, I go like, well, yeah, I'd love somebody who gave me that, who signed off on that amount of money.
Preller made that joke as well, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But to sit there and hear Fernando Tatis say, he was the one guy who really held me accountable when I screwed up.
Yeah.
And Fernando Tatis loves him maybe because of that. Not despite it, but because of it. To me, that shows some maturity on his part too. And a little bit of depth on his part that, you know, maybe most fans wouldn't recognize.
We don't have time to get into the complexity of the Fernando Tatis Jr. psyche, but I have always, and especially since he came back from suspension and the injury. And you remember the injury was even a part of the whole maturing process where he refused to get the surgery. And then AJ, no, you're doing it, dude. You kind of screwed us here. You're going to do what we say. We gave you $340 million. You're our franchise. So, you know, and so that was a part of their growth process. But ever since Fernando's come back, he has been, for a superstar athlete, fairly transparent, fairly introspective. We got to grade these guys on a curve. We can't put ourselves in their place and say, you know, what we would be if we were in the spotlight all the time, right? Like Fernando had to move away from downtown because he couldn't walk downtown, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, he is as big a star as there's been in San Diego, you know, really. And I covered the LT days. I covered, you know, this is, he's as big a star as there has been. And I do give him credit. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yep. Last on my list here is pitchers.
Two of them to go.
Pitchers. Sure. Padres have signed three of them, Kevin. Three of them in like the last 4 days. And it's Griffin Canning, who's coming off of an Achilles rupture, but had a really good first half of last year with the Mets. You look at Herman Marquez, a Padre killer over the years as a member of the Colorado Rockies rotation. And then yesterday evening, maybe the most surprising news, given that this was the third guy to sign, Walker Buehler. Kevin, I'm not asking you to rank them in order of impact, but rank them in order of impact for me, can you?
Yeah, it's really interesting. That's so this is me going off of talking with people in the organization. And look, they see an upside in all of them, right? But in order of impact, like, it's really interesting call between Walker Buehler and Griffin Canning, because Griffin Canning will not start until at least May, maybe June, might be a 60-day IL guy at the start of the season. But he had a really good first half last year, right? So what is he, you know, what does he bring? I don't know. We'll see. But certainly more than Marquez, who had a worse record. You can talk about Coors Field. He was worse, not record, ERA, other underlying numbers on the road last year. But he's also been hurt. They think he's healthier. But I wouldn't say their level of expectation is sky high for Herman Marquez.
Right.
Walker Buehler could be off the team in 3 weeks, or they could be so stoked about Walker Buehler. So I'm going to put Walker Buehler at the top. The guy's a bulldog. He's kind of a nutcase on the mound. He's super smart. He's super confident. He wants to shove it to the Dodgers. And like, he was awesome. And also he has been figuring out how his mechanics since coming back from a second Tommy John. And you know, if they can, with Ruben Niebla, if they can fix some of those mechanics for some of the command, his fastball getting away from him, and maybe even take up the velocity a little bit. He's not going to be throwing 99 again. It's not going to happen. But, like, they believe that there's a real something there. But all three of those, like, upsides have to be tempered with. All three of them might not be on the – not. I would think Griffin Canning, you know, his runway is a little longer. But, like, they all might not end up being contributors either. So that's the beauty of these last four, and also kind of the sad part of these last four signings. They're cheap as heck. Mm-hmm. Huge. I shouldn't say huge. Big upside. Could be nothing.
Could be nothing. But could be something. Could be something. Yeah. You don't know. I mean,
you've come a long way as a Padre observer. I like to plug this as much as possible. You grew up in San Diego. You've been a big Padre guy for a long time. Walker Buehler, Herman Marquez are the kind of guys that the old Padres would sign, and they were looking for them to be the number one or two starter, right? Or maybe fill in the good years, be behind Peavy or something, right? Now, these are the kind of guys they sign, and well, if they make the team, they make the team, and we'll be better for it. But, you know, the season's not banking on these guys.
Yeah, I was there when Jared Weaver pitched, I believe, the home opener for the Padres 1 year. Yeah, I'm familiar, Kevin, with all of this. Explain to me, why does Walker Buehler, who I think probably has had the best big league career of the three pitchers they've signed, and somebody who I think probably has the most to dream on of those three guys, why is he signing a minor league deal and the other two guys get big league deals?
Well, Padres have been in on Walker Buehler for a while. So clearly the fact that it finally happened is there wasn't anything else out there. But I'm with you on the question in that, like, isn't pitching at a premium? Like, but then you have to go, well, if no one signed him, no one even wanted to give him $1 million, like, maybe he's done. But you also have to remember, why is he on a minor league deal? If he believes in himself, there's an upside on this contract that he makes $4 million. And he didn't, that's not guaranteed, but he could, if he has the best year that, you know, he and his agent and the Padres worked out. So it's also about the structure of the minor league deal. Maybe the Padres had the best one. And maybe if he believes in himself, that was more than other teams were willing to guarantee on a major league deal. So, you know, and I don't know those answers, but that is often the case that he believes in himself. He liked what he saw this offseason. He likes what he sees in Ruben Niebla. He likes the opportunity in San Diego. And he says, and I'm just making up the other numbers now, he's all, well, I could have gotten 1.5 guaranteed in this team, but now this is a playoff contender. I believe in myself. And I think I'm going to get the majority of that $4 million if I go pitch for the Padres. That could very well be why Walker Buehler's here on a minor league deal.
Right. And the one thing that he has that Germán Márquez and Griffin Canning don't, I think, is A, playoff experience, B, big game experience. Again, just sort of a, he was, you know, the Phillies took a flyer on him down the stretch last year, and he was pretty darn good for them.
Right. And look, you know, we're searching for positives here because the numbers speak for themselves. He hasn't been good since he's come back for Tommy John. But in 2024, in the playoffs, he threw 5 shutout innings in a World Series game and a perfect 9th inning in the deciding game of the World Series against the Yankees. Like, the guy still is big game, you know, Buehler to a certain extent. Like, at least that capability is in there.
Yep, absolutely. I think it's interesting. The Padres have signed 5 players in the last, whatever it is, 3 days. 4 of the 5 have been All-Stars. Now, a long time ago.
And well, I was going to say cases, not as long ago as, say, Yuli Gurriel.
Right.
Or Jason Hayward.
Yep.
Now, I'm not, listen, I'm doing that to put it in context. Those guys were at best, and we, if you were paying attention, you knew it at the time, May or June, you know, DFAs.
Right.
That's not what Castellanos is. Right? Like that's just, like, this is better. It's still not what you would have, if you're a Padres fan, or heck, a Padres executive, a Padres player, it's still not what you would have hoped that they went out and they competed for, you know, a guy who actually got real money on a multi-year deal. But that's just not the reality for the Padres now.
Right. Keep in mind, Kevin, you wrote a week ago that Zach Gallen wasn't happening. No matter how much they wanted to make, people want Zach Gallen to the Padres to happen. It wasn't happening. And he got $21 million. I think in a world in where Zach Gallen gets $21 million, I think getting Walker Buehler on a minor league deal and Griffin Canning for a handful of millions of dollars and Germán Márquez for a couple million dollars, I think that that's smart and really sensible purchasing here. Now, of course, would you have rather gotten a $30 million guy? Yeah. But if Zach Gallen coming off that year is worth 20, I think the Padres are pretty lucky to get these guys for what they got them for.
It's at least, you at least understand it and all that. And also, let's try to remember, like, man, we get so geeked up on the signings. The Padres had the 3rd highest payroll in 2023. And how did that work out? Now, I'm not saying, look, it should have worked out better. Okay. And you would, if you're a fan, an executive, a player, you would give another shot at having the number 3, hey, media member, you give another shot at having the number 3 payroll. You are going to bet on that team.
Right.
But the creativity, the, like, hitting on certain players like Gavin Sheets and Jurickson Profar and Nick Pivetta, who, look, Pivetta had a much higher upside. He was going to be their number 3 starter last year when he came in. He ended up being their number 1. Yet this was not a flyer for Pivetta in the sense that it's a flyer for Walker Buehler. But nonetheless, they've done a much better job with less money than they did with more money.
Yep. No, that's a great point. And I think that that's when we talk about why is AJ Preller so valuable, it's because he's better. He's not just the guy who spent Peter Seidler's money, right? They then sort of changed the degree of difficulty on him a couple of years ago, and he's been even better at that, I think. he's done a really, now, I'm sure AJ Preller would rather have $70 million to spend every offseason.
I would love to see him have 70 mil to spend, especially the lessons he learned.
Right. Well, and
without Peter there, like 70 million without someone in the room going, yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, calling up the agent himself and basically negotiating the deal. You know, like, yes, I absolutely. Your points are spot on.
Yeah, it's interesting. Kevin, I put you on the spot at the end of every episode. Today is no different. There's one guy who we haven't talked about, a new Padre signing, and I'm going to ask you a very blunt question. Where does Ty France fit on this team, or does he?
It's hard to see, and I love Ty France. I thought Ty France was going to be the MVP of the 2020 Padres, because remember, you're going into COVID and like you thought, oh man, at that time, if put yourself back in the summer of 2020 and you thought it was basically guaranteed that every player on the team was going to have COVID at one point or another. And I thought Ty France is going to play every position and I just loved him. And so I'm a big Ty France guy. I don't see where. That said, he has a strong camp and, you know, that I can't come up with who has to have a bad camp is why I have trouble finding a spot for Ty France. I don't see him replacing Bryce Johnson. Like, Ty France isn't going to steal you bases as a you know, a pinch runner. Like, but they're going to let him play third, second. He's certainly going to get a chance because of all the guys gone for the WBC. He's going to be able to play some positions. He's made himself into a decent first baseman. We'll see. He's really liked in the clubhouse. He and Tatis have played together at multiple levels. He and Cronenworth, I think they were like in the same workout group that the Padres had during the shutdown during COVID. And he was here for the first, you know, 2 months of or month and a half of that COVID season. Like, Ty is well liked. He's got that going for him. I think it would be great if he's on the team. My answer is I don't see where the spot is for him.
I seem to remember he was their emergency catcher at some point too.
He was. This
was the first time around, which, you know, maybe he'll be the backup catcher, Kevin. No?
Yeah.
No? No? World's colliding? If Luis Camposano's story intersects with a Ty France story, does that? No? Okay.
I see where you're at, but that's that's a nebulous connection, boss.
It's very nebulous. Very nebulous. Kevin, thank you. I know that you've been slammed. I love it's 6 in the morning Pacific time, seeing a text from you saying, I just posted something. I can't imagine what your schedule's been like for the last week, but thank you for taking the time to talk. I'm sure we'll do it again here next week or the week after as news warrants. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.